Well, trick-or-treating is starting now, and we're going to help get in the mood for Halloween with a film critic talking about great horror movies.
With some frightening things happening in the headlines lately, the Ebola outbreak, there's war, school shootings, do we still need horror movies? Well, our next guest says we need the genre now more than ever, and he's here to make that case. He also shares his favorite horror movie since The Shining came out in 1980.
David Edelstein is chief film critic for New York Magazine and NPR's Fresh Air. David, welcome to Central Time and happy Halloween.
Well, thank you very much. It's already begun here with a vengeance. So
and
I
understand you are actually serving out some trick-or-treat candy as we speak.
You know, I'm sitting here on my stoop. I have my zombie research facility sign. I've got a skeleton hanging. I've got a big bowl of candy. This is Brooklyn, so it's fairly ethically traded candy. I've got my cocktail. I'm all ready for the evening, yes.
Well, that's wonderful. And you're not showing horrifying movies to the children as they approach, though, I hope.
No. Yeah, it's funny. The children that I've seen so far are in Spider-Man costumes and butterfly costumes and fairy costumes. It's more along the superhero lines. I mean, it's almost as if the traditional horror figures, or maybe it has something to do with the national mood that they're receding. Of course, I live in a more residential neighborhood over in Park Slope, which is the hipster part of Brooklyn. It's a little more outré, I guess you'd say. I mean, there were kids wearing Gian Gomeshi masks. It was terrifying. I mean, it's, oh, God. Keep your distance.
All right. We won't go dig too deep into that one. Well, speaking of the national mood, though, there's a lot of things in the news, scary stuff, Ebola, ISIS, you name it. You wrote a piece lately on why it's important to have horror movies when we've got so much real life horror. So what's the deal?
Well, you have no room to sort of repress these things. You know, you need some outlet for getting through them. And even though I've come to believe less and less in the kind of quasi-Freudian concept of catharsis, I still think we need to do something to confront these things. We need to look at the worst-case scenarios. Okay, what's the worst-case scenario of Ebola? Then plague-ridden cannibalistic zombies, right? What's the worst case of this whole Gamergate thing, this crazy abuse of women that's going on the internet, then, you know, looking at the roots of some of these stalker movies and what they say about the culture now, you can go through the list of kind of what the national traumas are. You know, surveillance, constant surveillance. You have the Saw movies in which this guy is basically monitoring people the whole time and torturing them, you know, in a manner that the NSA can only envy, the CIA can only envy. Oh, we got somebody here. Hello. Hi. Take two or three. Yeah, take three. I'm on the radio.
So real-time trick-or-treating going on there with David Edelstein, film critic.
Bye.
All right, what were the costumes? What were the costumes, David?
Well, she was actually, it was a girl, and she was wearing a Batman costume, but it looked like red silk pajamas with a Batman logo on it.
Huh.
So it's a very interesting, we're seeing lots of variations on the theme.
Well, let's get into some of your favorite horror movies, and you mark horror movies, modern horror movies, from The Shining.
Why is that a turning point? No, let me correct you there. We did a list at Vulture of the most interesting horror movies since The Shining, just because we thought they were a little more current. But, you know, the beginning, really, of the modern horror film, I would say, was George Romero's Night of the Living Dead. I mean, it was Romero, zombies, you know, really, his zombies really aren't the classic zombies. Those are sort of undead slaves who were employed by, you know, crazed capitalists in Haiti, whereas it was Romero who introduced the zombie cannibal plague idea. And what was great about that was he did it at the sort of the height of the counterculture of a lot of really horrible things going on with the civil rights, with blacks being beaten by, you know, by white sheriffs, and he incorporated that into the movie. And it really captures, as very few movies made in 1968 do, the disintegration of the nuclear family, the collapse of the social order. I mean, it is the perfect example of how horror can create this metaphor that is more penetrating, that is more far-reaching than a standard conventional movie like In the Heat of the Night that explores some of the same issues. It's just more powerful. Now, it's cruder, it's crasser, it's more sensationalistic. I'm not going to tell you that, you know, every horror film is you know, some great work of cinematic art, but there's a lot more in the genre than the popular audience often gives it credit for.
You know, does a horror movie have to have that metaphor, that resonance with the real world, or can it just scare us and still be a good movie?
Well, it can be a good movie, but if you can sit there and have jolts, but the scariest movie I've seen in the last few years that was just a sort of haunted house exorcism movie was The Conjuring. And The Conjuring has a huge political, you know, kind of reactionary subtext. It's about a family collapsing and a weak mother who can't keep control of her kids. And as a result, a demon moves in and gets her because she's the weakest link, and the demon tries to kill her children. And that really does tap into this feeling of, you know, mothers being sort of torn between working and staying home and projecting all this stuff on their kids. And, you know, most mothers can manage that, can deal with the resentment they inevitably feel toward their kids in this age when women are expected to do a little something more. But that movie was an example, again, of a sort of a worst-case scenario. You know, the devil comes in, she tries to kill her kids, the Catholic Church has to come in and exorcise the demon. And it's another great advertisement for the Catholic Church, which The Exorcist was too. So it's a very conservative movie. Most horror films you'll find do have political subtexts. I mean, you have to look at it, and I know there are lots of people out there listening going, oh, it's just a movie, it's entertaining, it's supposed to scare us. Well, sure, but there are lots of other things going on in the great horror movies than just trying to give you a scare.
We're talking to film critic and tonight candy distributor David Edelstein about the best horror movies and why we need horror now maybe more than ever.
We're taking your calls on this, too. What is your favorite horror movie of all time, and why do you think we still need scary horror movies, and why do you think we seek them out, even when things are kind of plenty scary in the real world? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our conversation now with film critic David Edelstein about the best horror movies since The Shining.
You can join in with your favorites at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Let's give a listen to a quick clip of The Shining.
Wendy.
Stay away!
Darling, light of my life. I'm not going to hurt you. You didn't let me finish my sentence. I said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains in.
Let's go to a caller before we throw that to David Edelstein. We've got Molly with us in Eau Claire. Molly, hi.
Hey, oh, that's funny. That's the clip you just played, because that's why I was calling The Shining. I saw it when my brother was babysitting me when I was in fourth grade.
Uh-oh.
And that freaked me out, and that line, too. I mean, the red rump, everything. And I still, to this day, see Jack Nicholson, like, at, you know, the Academy Awards or whatever, and I'm terrified of him.
Molly, thanks for the call. David, a lot of people cite The Shining as one of their favorite horror movies. I understand that wasn't the case when it came out, though.
No, it actually didn't do that well. I mean, I think a lot of people found it kind of tame, which is weird, because Kubrick said publicly he really wanted to hurt people with that movie. I think it's lasted so well. Again, I know there are a lot of people out there who are going, ah, this pointy head, you know, talking about themes and messages. But very few films have ever captured, first of all, the kind of rage of a patriarch at his family, you know, sort of inhibiting him creatively. Few films have ever caught that feeling of a writer whose brain is kind of grinding emptiness, but is a creative person, any creative person, but who is trying to sort of put on a show for the world that he's actually doing something. Few films have ever caught what it's like to be alone in some place for a long time with, you know, your child and your wife. I'm not talking about my own marriage here, but I'm, but you know, these things are all in the movie. They're all the things that sort of Stephen King was writing about, in addition to the child who has second sight and who sees the worst case scenario in his parents fighting. It's a very, very rich film. I don't think it's a perfect film, but it's a very rich film, and it's no mystery why it sort of captured the public imagination.
Molly, thanks for the call. Hope you've recovered from seeing that in the fourth grade. We'll go to Keith with us now in Green Bay. Keith, hi.
Hi. I think that Alien, the first one with Sigourney Weaver, is probably one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. And it crosses two genres. It's the classic stuck in the haunted house movie, but it's set in outer space.
Keith, thanks so much for that. David, I've always said Alien was a horror movie, not a science fiction movie.
Oh, it is a horror movie, but I love what he said, because it's the space, you know, that amazing advertising line, in space no one can hear you scream. That intensifies the isolation of the, oh, we got a trick-or-treater here. I'm going to hold on to Alien. Hi, how are you? Take two.
That's David Edelstein. He's giving out Halloween candy as we talk about scary Halloween movies. You can share your favorites at the Central Time Facebook page. What is your favorite scary movie of all time?
Let's talk about Alien for just a second, because Alien is a touchstone in what some people call the sort of body horror subgenre. I mean, what's really terrifying about Alien is that it's full, the design of H.R. Giger and the set design is all full of, you know, weird kind of phallic, or even, pardon my language, sort of vaginal imagery, and the alien actually impregnates this guy and then erupts out of the stomach, and I know that's a spoiler, but
it's early.
I mean, it's a body horror movie. It's about sort of people's estrangement from their own sexuality and their own body. And when you say, oh, you're projecting, no, that's very much what was on the mind of the people who made it. And one reason it is a haunted house movie. He's dead right. And really, structurally, it's kind of a dull movie. Narratively speaking, it's kind of a dull movie. But what grabs us, and what will always grab us, is that kind of icky, invasive feeling, like there's something under us. There's something that gets into us, however it does, and is about to erupt out of us.
Another movie on your list. Let's give a listen to The Blair Witch Project.
And this is where we've ended up. And it's all because of me that we're here now. Hungry and cold and hunted.
Now, this was a milestone in movie marketing, too, but was it an effective horror movie, David?
Well, it scared me.
Me too.
I know there's been a huge backlash against it. There are people say, well, there's nothing there. I would argue that the fact that there's sort of nothing there was what was so scary about it. It taught us, in an age when directors were just throwing special effects at you, when there were all sorts of manifest, you know, ghosts and monsters and goblins and ghouls, that, you know, what we don't see, a subjective camera held up in the woods, what's outside the frame, a sound, a shadow, a dash of light, there's this irrational terror that was rediscovered in the Blair Witch Project, the thump under the bed or at the end of the hall, and carried forward in Paranormal Activity. You notice in the first one, you notice there are, it's a very limited perspective. You're not going to cut to another angle. You're forced to look at the world through this one single lens, and that's what makes it so terrifying. And it also, you know, hooked up with the, you know, incredible, you know, explosion of technology that allowed us all to have our cameras and all to see the world through our cameras, which paradoxically makes us feel more vulnerable.
We'll go back to our callers. We've got Evan with us now in La Crosse. Evan, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's your movie?
To go back to Aliens, my movie is actually John Carpenter's The Thing, his remake of the 50s classic. And I had just seen that for the first time over the summer. I didn't really know much about it. I just knew it's about an alien that can turn itself into like any other living being, like animals or other people. And I thought it was very good, terrifying, and very suspenseful.
Evan, thanks. David, John Carpenter's The Thing.
I love it. And it's on that list of the movies that I mentioned before, as is Blair Witch. It's another body horror movie. It's the effects were unprecedented, and in fact, in some ways, have never been equaled by this guy named Rob Bottin. You have, you know, things, tentacles exploding out of people, and bodies, you know, sort of literally rearranging themselves in a very gooey and disgusting way before your eyes. And it also, unlike the great Howard Hawks produced original, which is a terrific movie, it's sort of closer to the idea of the original short story, which is you don't know what's inside anybody. You don't really know who anybody is. They could be, you know, all of a sudden they could be really nice and, you know, you could turn around and they could swat you. You know what, I'm not going to get into Gian Gomeshi anymore. But anyway, it's just, it's more of this sort of who is anybody? Who do we, who, you know, how do we know these people when we just see their faces or hear their voices? They might have these exploding tentacles.
David, we're just about out of time. You've got two David Lynch movies on your list. I wanted to ask you, though, given that you like David Lynch, excited about the announcement of a return of Twin Peaks?
Hugely. I mean, look, David Lynch is a major artist. He's made a lot of screwed up movies, but he's one of the few who kind of, you feel, works out of his own unconscious. He puts things on the screen that nobody else does. Many people have said, oh, Blue Velvet and Mulholland Drive, they're not horror movies. Well, of course they're horror movies. They're movies about the unconscious going from people's heads into the real world and changing what we see and identities mutating and monsters springing up from our unconscious. I mean, they are two amazingly great horror films. And if people don't think they're horror films, then they need to expand their definition of horror films.
David, lots of fun. Happy Halloween to you.
Thank you. Happy Halloween.
That's David Edelstein, chief film critic for New York Magazine and NPR's Fresh Air.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. News is coming up next here on Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.